The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling. I am your host, Strigger, joined, of course, again by my co-host, Dylan. Dylan, how is it going?
Man, Strigger, like I said, I feel like a million bucks right now. I've got the football game on in the background. We're recording this on a Sunday, special Sunday recording.
Right.
For you guys. I just know that I'm sacrificing for all of you by missing out on my beloved Panthers. But as I said on the last episode, I do want to tie this into pro wrestling. As we saw Red Shoes Uno make his NFL debut last week in the Panthers-Broncos game. Terrible refereeing we saw.
I don't get the reference at all, but I'm happy if you did. So
do you know who Red Shoes Uno is?
I know who Red Shoes Uno is.
Well, just know that was bad refereeing. That is the point I'm making. They robbed our beloved Panthers. That's our team. This is the Eastern Lariat's team, the Panthers, and we got robbed.
Wasn't my team Jesse's team?
Turncoat. Turncoat. Yeah, I hope Jesse's not listening to this. But anyway, let's get to the Japanese grabs.
Japanese grabs, and this is a special episode because last weekend I went back and I saw that on September 11, 2005, Big Mouth Loud ran their first show in Curriken Hall. And 10 years ago, on August 20, 2006, Big Mouth Loud ran their final show. So this promotion only lasted 1 year, but it's when I saw that they started 11 years ago, I suddenly remembered some of the matches and some of the scenes, the wild scenes this promotion produced. And let me quickly go back in time. In 2004, the then matchmaker for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Fumihiko Uwai, left the promotion after basically being with New Japan with a brief intermission. He was with New Japan since 1986, I think, when he left college. He left New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2004 because I think he had a confrontation with the then president of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So he left on bad terms. And in November of 2004, he announced that he was going to establish a real strong style promotion. Dylan, I don't know. When I compare New Japan in 2004 and when I compare New Japan now, wasn't 2004 much closer to strong style than it's now?
He would have, Uwai would have broken off and had like two or three promotions, like Onita style.
Yeah.
In this day and age, if he wanted more strong style. But yes, I totally agree. I totally agree with your point on that one.
So that was a weird time to break away and establish real strong style, because back then we still had the guys like Katsuyuki Fujita and Brock Lesnar came in later. So,
Yeah, Enokiism was in full swing
during that era,
and it was a weird time all around for New Japan. So just crazy things happen sometimes.
Definitely.
In New Japan, and we can't really explain it or say it, but he did start this legendary Big Mouth Loud promotion.
Right. With a great logo. I think when you're listening to the podcast, you're looking at the logo. If you have subscribed to some of our feeds, that is, of course, if you're listening to this and you've subscribed to our feeds, please leave a review and a rating. You can also, of course, go to mlwradio.com and listen to the show and search in the drop-down menu or at the front page, subscribe, rate, and review. As I said, as we are bringing you this podcast completely for free, and this podcast is going back in history. As I said, we are talking about Uwai and Big Mouth Aloud, and not only did Uwai leave New Japan Pro Wrestling, but he took Katsunari Murakami and the young Katsuyori Shibata with him. And, well, he got Akira Maeda and Masakatsu Funaki on board with Big Mouth Loud. At the first show, you could see Maeda and Funaki sitting in the front row, but those two split from Big Mouth Loud shortly after that. And
Maeda has the habit of doing things like that.
Yeah, certainly. Maeda is a weird... Maeda is a legendary guy, of course, but if things don't go his way, he's gone.
I'm a huge fan of his, but that reputation is completely accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, so Murakami then established the promotion called Big Mouth Loud. And I watched most of the matches. You can search on YouTube and you will find many matches from the 8 Big Mouth Loud shows that happened. But we want to specifically talk about the first show on September 11, 2005 and on August 20, 2006, because those two shows represent the downfall of Big Mouth Aloud. But let's start with a promotion that hoped to find its place within Japanese pro wrestling. The first show on September 11 drew an announced crowd of 2,048 people to Kurken Hall. It was broadcasted on ESPN in Japan, which is a big deal. And the show had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches. And I don't know, Dylan, how do we approach this? Do we start with the first match, or what are we going to do?
This show was big. It was, like you said, it got a good deal on the ESPN. They had Kaz Yamazaki.
Right.
Commentary.
Not only on commentary, but also as the special referee in the main event.
Yes, that's right. Murakami and Shibata. There were some matches I saw here. You could tell right from the beginning that they were going for, his vision, I guess, of strong style, with Yoshiaki Fujiwara, the legend himself, and they had a bit of an exhibition with Osamu Kido. Time limit draw, 15 minutes. This was very boring.
This was, the thing about this match. This was the first match the people saw from this promotion.
That's exactly what I was. Yeah,
the first match was not with some young guys who could have been the future of Big Mouth Aloud, but no, with two older guys having a grappling exhibition that went 15 minutes, as you said, and in the end, the referee fucked up the finish as he made a sign to the timekeeper that the 15-minute time limit had expired, but the timekeeper didn't get it and didn't ring the bell. That was very strange and a bad, bad start for Big Mouth Aloud. They should have started with Daisuke Ikeda versus Katsumi Usuda, really. That was an explosive 5-minute, not shoot style match, but yeah, they did some grappling on the ground, but also had some strikes. This was really what I believe that Uwai thought his promotion should be all about.
Yeah, exactly. These guys and some more guys coming up, these battle arts guys that they bring in, really represented, I think, what he wants to see, and definitely what I wanted to see over that over that grappling match that started. No offense to Fujiwara, but they just went 5 minutes. It was a sprint match, too, Yusuda and Ikeda. This went, 5 minutes total. But, when Yusuda hit his head kick, that was one of the biggest pops of the show, the one thing I will say too is I don't know how I feel about the countout. And right away this struck me. I didn't know how to feel about the countout and the pinfall. both being there. Because in Battle Arts, it's count out, and in regular, it's pinfall. This they had them both, and I don't know what the psychology is of going for a count out.
Oh, damn. Pinfall. Yeah, that was the weird deal about the rules of Big Mouth Lord. And it took you out of the match, you know? Especially, yeah. I don't know if you saw the match, but I ended up watching another Shibata match that was from a show called Big Mouth Lord Re-Illusion. That was in Kirken Hall. That was in February 2006, and Shibata faced a guy named Alan Karaev.
Oh.
That was a 4-minute main event, and
I didn't watch this. I don't watch anything with him.
Almost felt like a shoot, because Karaev, he is a Russian guy and has a sumo and MMA background, and I don't know if he had many more matches than this one.
When I saw his name, I was thinking like it would be someone like Hashmakov or like Volkan or something
He only had 2 matches in Big Mouth Loud.
So yeah, then I saw him and I was like, oh dear.
Basically a shooter. And Shibata went down a couple of times, and the ref always went in between and started counting, and it really took you out of the match, even though the match only lasted 4 minutes. So that was really strange, and a strange touch of the rules here. Still, we had another good match coming up was Tomohiro Ishii. A young Tomohiro Ishii fighting against Hiroyuki Ito. What did you think about that match?
I want to talk about Ito and how great he was. If you remember Ito, he was in Tamura's promotion, U-Style, and had the best match in that company's history with each other, Ito and Tamura. And if you remember, New Japan actually had this guy earlier in the year in the Young Lions Cup. He made it all the way to the finals, losing to Hiroki Goto. And Ito should have been so much more, because I feel like he should have caught on with someone. He had a lot of potential, I thought. I love the way he sold Ishii's like lariats here. He just kind of crumbled down.
Yep.
And, here, Ishii, he had his hair, and he really, you know, he was kind of like a less refined version of what he is now, in some ways. The chops. He had a great palm strike early on that I noticed, and I think Ito could have been so much more. That was my main takeaway from all
this. There is another guy I want to talk about when we get further on with Big Mouth Lao, but yeah, definitely Hiroyuki Ito, he really impressed me. And what impressed me about this match as well is this was strong style, you know? Two guys hitting each other, and then at some points of the match just appeared as if they weren't really working together, but working against each other. But in the end, the match still came down to a decisive finish, and I think the finish worked here. And also this one embodied the spirit that I think Big Mouth Loud was going for.
I totally agree. Ito had a couple of great flurries where he just went off on Ishii here. Yeah, Ishii looked good too. Like I said, he was he's not. It's not like you won't recognize him if you've only seen him in the last couple of years. He's definitely Ishii.
Yeah, he's going the same style.
But more hair.
More hair. Yeah. The next match was a weird one. Big Mouth Loud had so many weird influences to their shows that totally didn't match what the original idea was. We had Buck Quartermain and Steve Madison against Ricky Shoshu and a then a trainee of him, I believe, and protege. I think he trained under Shoshu, Takashi Uwano. Yeah, he was trained by Shoshu, right? Uwano, I think he also had a stint in New Japan, if I'm correct. Yeah, he had, but later on, actually, after Big Mouth Loud closed down, Takashi Uwano went to back to New Japan when Ricky Shoshu took over the book there. Oh yeah, he teamed with his coach in this match, and this wasn't very much.
Oh,
The tag matches in Big Mouth Loud were always kind of boring because they didn't really work to a hot tag. They just did grappling on the ground and then they did the tag. And that's my main issue with shoot-style tag matches. Also in Battle Arts, I really didn't like when they did tag matches there.
Yeah, that's true. There are a couple that stand out, but yeah. I totally see your point. So occasionally they would... you know, it's just it kind of doesn't really work within the style.
Yeah.
This match was terrible. I love this tag match. To me, the only explanation I could have behind it is that they just wanted Choshu on the show, and he probably just said, "Hey, get Uwano on with me." Yeah. But another thing is, like, these random tag matches on these shows, it never really, and that's my problem with this whole promotion as we watched it. It never really felt like we were going anywhere.
Oh, there is more coming.
Yes, exactly. And like, so some things didn't make any sense. And speaking of things that didn't make any sense, what about the next match? Speaking of shoot style, I guess.
Enson Inoue took on a judo guy called Gérard Bordeaux. No.
Are you a fan of either of these?
No, karate. Sorry, not judo. Gérard Bordeaux, apparently from the Netherlands. Big guy. A lengthy guy. Yeah. They went to a shoot style match for 2 minutes, for 3 minutes. Then Inoue had him in a cross arm breaker. He tapped, but at the same time had his leg under the rope. And so this was kind of a disputed finish. And this is another thing of those Big Mouth Loud deals that never went anywhere.
Yeah, I don't understand it. This match made no sense to me. I didn't think it was very good. I guess they were trying to go for a shoot style. I don't think Gordo had a lot of training at this point in terms of wrestling. I think he was just kind of like, you know, kind of like, this is like an IGF match.
Right.
Almost. I think this is what spawned IGF. You could trace its origins directly back to this match.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a weird deal. Much, much better than Yuki Ishikawa and Alexander Otsuka. That's right down your alley.
Finally. That's what I was thinking when these guys showed up. Another thing, too, in all the shows, when the entrances come out, they play like this dramatic music.
Yeah.
That they dub over. And both guys just walk out, clipped entrances and all that. And I was so happy to see these two here. You know, it really wasn't as shoot style as you would think, considering these guys, but it was very much the strong style. I think this is the perfect representation of what they should have tried to go for. And these two are the two men who should have been feuding with Shibata at some point in this show, or in this promotion. Ishikawa is a hand in glove fit to fight these someone like that, but they went a different direction. But this is really the one match, especially on the first show, I would say to check out. And they did some great things in Battle Arts too that were even more spectacular. But this was really good.
Yeah, and at that point in time, Yuki Ishikawa was in his late 30s, and I think Alexander Otsuka was. The same age as Ishikawa is. I'm just checking. Yeah, he's actually a little bit younger than Ishikawa. So those two would have been guys to really build on.
And they would have been great to put over Shibata, which is another issue.
yeah, and to build on with those guys, but. That's another issue we are going to talk about when we talk about the main event. But still, Ishikawa, a great, great guy. He has so many great moves, and he transitions so well. In all of his matches, he used this move that he transitions from the ankle lock into a German suplex. You know, he basically has the one leg of his opponent still hooked for the ankle lock, and then goes for a German suplex. That looks so fantastic. And he has some great back fists as well. Oh man, Ishikawa. He's now training guys at Santino Marella's Battle Arts Academy in Canada. And man, those guys training under him are so lucky.
He's a great guy too. Like I said, when I wrote my article on him for Pro Wrestling Spirit, he read it and he contacted me actually.
Man,
and we talked.
Cool.
We talked a little bit about that. We actually became kind of friends off of that. And he's so. I just say anything about Ishikawa. First of all, I could not recommend him more as a trainer. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time, so that was a highlight of my life, talking to this guy.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, he's so proud of Asuka in WWE, one of his trainers. And yes. He hooked me up with some great Queen Bee stuff, too. So shout out Ishikawa. So, you're the man. Asuka had some great suplexes in this match, too, a lot of deadlift style.
Yep.
That's kind of like his MO. So yeah, I love these guys. I wish Carl Greco had been here, too. But they had a lot of... not used well, as we'll get to Ishikawa going forward, and who they decided to feud him with.
Oh boy, yeah. then one of the main two of the main guys in this promotion, we had the main event of the first show, refereed by the legendary Katsuo Yamazaki, when Katsunari Murakami beat Katsuyori Shibata in approximately 10 minutes. What did you think?
I didn't understand the point of Shibata, the new ace, the rising star. Kind of, these two are who the promotion was built around in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And I love Murakami as well. So I have no problem with him winning personally. It's just what they did later that I didn't understand. As for this match, it was pretty good. I thought, you know, it was, I'm probably near or the top of the match of the night. I thought it could have been even better though. In my opinion, no real inkling of that specifically. I just think that it could have gotten to a great, great level because I'm such a huge fan of these guys, and it was still really good. Don't get me wrong, but compared to the undercard stuff, I thought it was a solid main event. I would say a very strong main event.
Yes,
compared to the undercard,
I was surprised that this match didn't go very long, but in the end,
it 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's basically Murakami. You know, I can't watch many Murakami matches in a row. Murakami is a great guy for these chaotic matches. With you know, the slogan of Big Mouth Loud was always "Mad, be mad with attitude." That was the slogan that that Big Mouth Loud was built on, and Murakami embodies this slogan so perfectly. But the thing about him is that he doesn't have he's always on the verge of being a mass murderer, you know.
I think that's true.
he isn't chilled. He only has this one mode, and this one mode is go all in and look like you could kill somebody. And that sometimes takes me out of the match because it doesn't always fit, you know? But...
That's true.
But he has great selling, which we saw in the match he did with Kensuke Sasaki. Great selling. And yeah, the problem with this was those two guys that they were trying to build on, and two of the really few guys they had under contract, which is another problem, went against each other in the main event when probably it would have been a better call to team them up against a team of outsiders and have them go over, you know?
Ishikawa and Asuka.
Right! Like, yeah.
That would have been perfect as a main event. But,
yeah, and so that is a big problem that the promotion had going forward. Because after the first show, that was so-so. I really liked going back and watching all of those matches, and I had a good time. But if you put it all together, it really wasn't that convincing. Because as we go on, this "Be Mad with Attitude" slogan became a problem for Big Mouth Loud, because this promotion was built on chaos, you know, wild brawls between guys from different promotions, like Katsuyori Shibata, for example, invaded Ricky Pro at the time, the promotion Ricky Shoshu was competing in. And they had a wild riot. And if you have these kind of angles all the time, you know, the chaos becomes normal. And if the chaos becomes normal, it isn't anything special anymore.
Yeah, and also they're kind of whole deal here. Like, you can tell just from the logo, and as we talked about earlier, it's a wolf kind of like parodying New Japan's logo, but with a wolf.
Yep.
this promotion's kind of like a renegade promotion, is kind of how it was positioned anyway. And I totally agree with you that it quickly lost its luster when they kept, you know, they kept on doing the same thing over again. And had a lot of random matches, and I said before, I didn't know where anything was going. it didn't really feel like there was any end game for anyone in the promotion. There's no big goal. There's no title or anything like that.
Yeah.
Did you see the match? Just skipping ahead here on the second show. Kojima and Shibata.
I did.
We saw that was a good draw for Big Mouth Loud to get Kojima in.
It was a good
someone again who doesn't fit in with anyone else on this roster. I felt like
you're right. And if I look at this card, there's so much stuff that just doesn't add up. We had
TNA offer match.
Yes. All of the sudden, AJ Styles and PT Williams had a mid-2000s indie style match, which wasn't bad. It was a good match, I would say. But
great on this show.
Yeah, but totally didn't fit.
What was this all about? It was totally unexpected to see AJ Styles and Big Mouth Loud. That's a great footnote on the champ's career. Like, how did this even happen?
I'm not sure. I probably need to check that back. But we also had Yoshiaki Fujiwara against Akitoshi Saito, out of all people. Murakami went against Enzo Inoue, got another win. A match I want to talk about on the undercard that I saw was and really, really liked was Manabu Hara and Muninori Sawa.
I wanted to talk about Hara because...
Please do.
I watched a couple of his matches on this, and man, he's underrated.
So underrated. From time to time he appears at some indie shows.
Yeah,
but this guy really should have been more.
Just like Ito. Yeah, it's like... I totally agree with you. Hara was, and we had a tag match he was in later on. I would talk about big guys that you wouldn't think, but he, to me, stood out as one of the best guys. Well, two big guys and one lackluster. Hara looked so solid. Was still very young here. You know, this is 2006. He's still kind of, you know, Ishikawa trained him. He was among the new class when Battle Arts returned, had their resurrection. He was like one of the new guys.
Yep.
And yeah, so Hara, man, I totally agree with you. I'm so glad you brought him up because I wanted to say the same thing, how underrated he was and is. And that's the one thing about Big Mouth Loud I will say is that they had a bunch of guys that could have been so much more. I feel like if Big Mouth Loud had stuck around more or had a plan or they just got to big promotions.
Yeah, Manabu Hara, he went to Futen then.
Futen.
After Battle Arts ended, of course, he kind of disappeared. He didn't have many matches after 2011, after the final Battle Arts show happened. He was in DDT 01, and then...
He just never got a chance.
No, he never got a chance, and he... only does small indie shows that really
he's only
don't.
34 now.
Yeah. He only does small indie shows that really don't get a lot of attention. For example, last year he wrestled for Kyushu Pro Wrestling, for Heat Up, was at the 20th anniversary of Alexander Otsuka, at the retirement show of Ruji Walter. So many small shows. So sad that this guy never really got a shot anywhere.
And a good example of that, look, I'm looking at cage match right now, and he was in the Tenkaichi Junior tournament that we've been covering. He was in it last year, and who did he lose to?
To Brother Yashi.
Insane. I can't believe he's this young, though. If someone could give him a chance now, I bet he'd still be great.
He would be a great fit right now for Big Japan, for example.
Yeah. Him and Hideki going at it.
Yeah. Totally.
Anyway, totally, I like that match too, Sawa and Hara, anyway.
But back to the madness here. AJ Styles and PD Williams, of course, we mentioned it. AJ Styles going over with a second rope Styles clash. Why not?
They would never be seen again in Big Mouth Loud.
Right. And then we have one of the main issues with this promotion. Satoshi Kojima going over Katsuyori Shibata. So you have to think about the paying customer. You're going to the show, you're paying for the Big Mouth Loud guys, a guy comes in, back in the day, Kojima, of course, was with All Japan Pro Wrestling, and he beats the hometown guy and just disappears. The same thing, as I mentioned, happened to Murakami one or two shows later when he faced Kensuke Sasaki. Sasaki actually beat Murakami twice on one show.
in total, like 3.5 minutes.
Yes, 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 yes. And Shibata lost here again. And this was... Do you remember Royal Road, or King's Road back then, with the ace Kazushi Miyamoto?
Yes, I do remember that. He's part of one of my all-time favorite teams before he left, that Turmeric Storm.
Right. So, very similar to King's Road back then, they had a young ace in Katsuyori Shibata, Big Mouth Loud, that is. Mm-hmm. That young ace, they tried to get him over, but they tried to get him over by facing credible opposition, but opposition he wasn't able to beat because of political reasons. And he got some wins, but mostly he lost to those guys from outside, and that didn't help him. That didn't help him at all.
No, like I said, they tried in this Kojima match. You know, Kojima had to lariat him over and over to get the win. So I guess that kind of protected him. But this is the ace, and the crowd was totally behind Shibata too. I don't think it was a question of if Shibata was ready. Or not, or anything like that. He had the crowd behind him. I've always thought of the Three Musketeers around this time, and I know I'm not alone in this. He was the best one of Tanahashi and Nakamura and him.
At that time, he was the most polished of them, and yeah. New Japan was really behind him. I remember in the 2004 G1, right before he beat Shono.
Yeah, and he almost made it to he almost advanced in his first year of the G1. But yeah, like you said, they were getting behind him, and the fans were behind him, even in Big Mouth Loud, as the potential ace, and I really loved all of these matches I've seen. One thing stood out with Shibata. I really loved his work at this time, and it reminded me of how big of a fan I was of him. And it was funny, we were talking off air, and you were saying that Shibata has grown now. To me, I thought he was so much more dynamic in a lot of ways back here.
Yeah, he was more dynamic, but I think as a complete package with there is this term that pro wrestlers use to get it. You know, I think he's much more advanced right now.
Yeah, but I just loved his style. Stylistically, I thought he was better here. He had so many, and his match with Nakajima, I watched later on. That match, he was breaking out all sorts of submissions. He hit a pile driver at one point. And I was like, man, he is so motivated in this promotion to make this work. But they just, I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking with Shibata.
Yeah, okay.
Because he really came across so motivated to me. That's another point I wanted to make.
Yeah, sure. The reason he left... I'm satisfied with the role he had in New Japan. That they put him on top here in Big Mouth Loud, and I think that really brought out the best in him, and he really worked hard.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought that made it worthwhile watching all these, just to see him back in these days, all the things he was doing, and how hard he was trying, even with the booking. But
right. And then we had the third show of that show. I watched this tag match. That was a good tag match. One of those better tag matches in the shoot style. Ishikawa and Sawa against Katsumi Usuda and Manabu Hara.
Yeah.
That was a great match with four guys, three of them very young. Usuda? No, Usuda isn't very young, I think. Or am I wrong?
This was his ball. He wasn't that old, but
he wasn't that old. No, he's still not that old.
Yeah. Even though he did retire.
Yeah. Right. But he was
going through his bald phase here, so that may have confused you.
Right.
I was not a fan of that.
But in 18 minutes, a really, really well worked match with Sawa bursting out shining wizards and all kinds of stuff. Sawa has always been a big Keiji Muto fan.
Yeah.
And Ishikawa, of course, then in the end getting the victory. That was a great finish, actually, with a ground cobra twist, and you saw Sawa diving over the opponent and making sure the other one doesn't interfere. It was great.
Yeah, Sawa, man, just for someone so young, what a shame. Speaking of someone who retired too young.
Damn.
Man, he was the man in his last year of wrestling. And much like Ikuno Hidaka, he was one of the shoot stylists. Unlike Super Tiger, as we talked about before, he really was a hand-in-glove fit for the natural pro wrestling style.
I'm so glad I got to see him live.
Oh, you did?
Yes. He was in Germany for... I think he was in Germany a couple of times, actually. I once saw him in the Ambition tournament. The Ambition is the shoot style brand of WXW in Germany.
Nice.
And then he had a match. Let me quickly. Yeah, he had a couple of matches, actually. No, at first he was in the 16 karat gold 2010, beat Paul Tracy in the first round, and then lost to Big One Walter in the second round. He had a match against Zack Sabre Jr. at the third day of the 16 karat gold 2010, and then he came over for the Ambition tournament in 2011, Ambition 2 back then, had a match against Hikaru Sato there, and then also beat Tommy End, and in the finals lost to Riko Bushido. So I actually got to see like 6 or 7 matches from Muninori Sawa, which was a great treat back then.
Ah, man, no doubt about it. He was one of the best when he was around in 2011. But to your point, too, I'm looking at the Cage Rush card for this show. And another example of matches that don't make any sense, nor do they go anywhere in Big Mouth Loud. We had a Michinoku Pro offer match with Rusty, of all people, taking on Yoshitsune.
Yeah, the Fukumen World League 2016, back in 2006.
Yeah, the Big Mouth Loud version. But why did this happen? Where does this fit in? There was no cruiserweight championship in Big Mouth Loud or any sort of thing of that nature.
I believe there was supposed to be a New Japan participation in this show. I think I read that in the Wikipedia article about Big Mouth Loud. And that fell apart, and I believe that that Michinoku Pro sent people, and I think also Kensuke Sasaki went in to save the day for Big Mouth Loud here.
Oh yeah, he saved the day.
Yeah!
4-minute match, destroying your top star twice.
Dude, how decisive was that? He...
It could not have been
many of those Big Mouth Loud matches started with one guy just bursting out a strike. And this one started with Sasaki just lariating Murakami to hell.
Yeah, poor Murakami.
Beat him in three minutes and 38 seconds. Then the match was restarted and Sasaki hit a Northern Lights bomb and beat him in 34 seconds. Dude.
Man. What a great businessman Sasaki was.
Yes. He totally had it down.
Yeah, Murakami, man. Why would you sacrifice your... And the man who beat Shibata on the first show.
Yes.
So really, you're doing damage to, like,
everything.
Not only Murakami, but both of his guys that he's beaten so far.
There was damage all over the place. Also in the main event with Katsuyori Shibata going against a guy named Hidetaka Momna. Did you see the match?
Yeah, Monma. I, to be honest, I watched it, but I can't remember anything about it now other than, man, what happened in this match?
Yeah, this was a perfect example of a shooter not knowing what he was doing. For example, Shibata...
I think that's why I was dazing in and out of this, because it's like, huh? But go on.
Yeah, for example, Shibata doing the penalty kick, going for the cover... And Monma immediately turning around onto his stomach. So that didn't work. And in the end, I think a backdrop hold finished it for Shibata. He did get a win. But again, like against this Russian sumo guy, Shibata didn't look good because of his opponent.
I think if there's some justice to this, I think it's that Monma does not have his picture on Cage Match. and well deserved, because he's not going to go down as a Hall of Famer in wrestling, I don't think.
No. Probably not.
hey, there's still time. He could make a huge comeback.
Yeah. He still has some time left. He's only 42 years old, so maybe he's making his grand return at a upcoming hard hit show. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Let me quickly look at the Big Mouth Loud Illusion 4 card, but there wasn't much.
Yeah, I kind of skipped over all this up until the
main event. Then at the next show, after being beaten down by Kensuke Sasaki, Katsunori Murakami teamed with Sasaki to take on Minoru Suzuki and Yoshiaki Fujiwara, who... Those two had this dysfunctional team thing going on, which should have been the deal for Murakami and Sasaki, to be quite honest. So, yeah.
What a match.
Man, this promotion.
Again. But at least the right man got the pin.
Yeah. Well, as I'm reading the German notes for this show, Murakami was supposed to be Fujiwara's partner, and Minoru Suzuki was supposed to team with Kensuke Sasaki. When announcing the when the ring announcer announced the teams, Fujiwara shoved Murakami away from him, and Minoru Suzuki agreed to team with Fujiwara. So I don't know why they had this dysfunctional team thing going on. Good lord. But at least we got Shibata versus Nakajima.
Really good match, like I said.
Yeah, 12-minute match. Both young guys at this point. Nakajima was like 17 or 18 years old at that time. Great talent, obviously. If you think about where Nakajima was then and where Nakajima is now, and how much time elapsed between those. Between 2006 and now, and how many matches and promotions he went through, man.
Not a lot different.
No. There should have been so much more with this guy. But that was the problem with most of the Kensuke office guys. Being with Kensuke, of course, brought them in, opened doors for them, but they're
at the glass ceiling.
Right, there was the glass ceiling because they never were contracted to any of those promotions they were wrestling in, but they were only with Kensuke Sasaki. And Kento Miyahara really was the first guy to be smart enough to see that he had to break away from Kensuke Sasaki. And you could see where Kento Miyahara is now. And you could see where Katsuhiko Nakajima is now. So Kento Miyahara has surpassed his trainer, actually.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Miyahara was great, but, you know, like I said, the thing with Sasaki is, like you said, he's the consummate businessman, you know. There's a lot of stories about Sasaki out there, you know, but I will say, obviously, he is a legend. He's had some great, memorable matches, but, you know, it wasn't the best business move, as it turned out, to align with Kinsuke office and Diamond Ring later on. And I think Nakajima is a great example of that. Though I did like his trunks that he wore, his tights that were, you know, the Sasaki style.
Yeah.
I like that much better than his generic, like, black and silver stuff he has now. So I will say that Nakajima's favorite. That's one way that he was much better. He doesn't.
To the point of AJ Styles, just quickly going back, I just went back to what AJ Styles' cage match profile, and he only had this one match in December of 2005, but he also was at the then Wrestle One Grand Prix in August of 2005, but nothing in between, so he just came over for this one match in Big Mouth Loud. Weird deal.
I guess they saw something in him. They thought he was a big star.
Well, he at least was on television in America, so
that is true.
That counts. Big Mouth Aloud ran another show. Then we are already in 2006. They ran a couple of shows. only two shows in 2005, and the other six shows all happened in 2006. We are right now in June of 2006 with Big Mouth Aloud, Illusion 5, and dude, there was Munenori Sawa against Manabu Hara.
Yeah.
I think you saw that match too, did you?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they wrestle twice though? We talked about
that. Yes, they wrestled twice. They had kind of a feud, you know. These two were the only guys you could tell.
The only feud.
Yeah. That only feud happened in the mid-card. And another feud we mentioned, the Mad Dogs, Mad Dog Goto and Mad Dog O'Hara beat Ito and Ishikawa and the Mad Dogs, man, just two, at that point, already old guys, just brawling and nothing else.
Yes.
Dude.
You know, and they were surpassed later on by Hiroki Goto and Hajime O'Hara in their namesake. And I was hoping some of the lineage would pass on. And I've seen these guys a bunch of times in New Japan. These guys are like New Japan veterans.
Yes.
And I knew what to expect, and I hated that Ishikawa was stuck with these two, and Ito as well, in this match. Ishikawa had a couple of matches against the Mad Dogs, but... What was this?
But let's talk about the better things on this show, because there is really a hidden gem on this show, on Big Mouth Aloud Illusion 5, June 18, 2006, with Naomichi Marufuji and Takeshi Morishima against Katsuyori Shibata and Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, I watched this match.
Great tag team match. Still junior heavyweight Marufuji back then.
A good portion of 06 and Noah was building up Marufuji as a legitimate challenger. He was on his way. I remember earlier in the year he'd beaten Kawe.
Yeah.
That was his big match. So this was kind of in the middle of his build, and it culminated in his surprise heavyweight title win 3 months after this match. But you could already see the Japanese fan was taking to him as a star. And he got a great reaction when he and Shibata jumped in the ring to start off the match. That got a big reaction. How skinny was Ibushi?
Oh man, Ibushi back then. He was, I think, he was like 2 years in at that point.
Yeah, very young.
Very young, but you could you could already see what was supposed to, what he was all about. When in the end he took a backdrop suplex from Morishima, and he really landed hard on his neck.
And the lariat that Morishima hit him with, right after that was devastating.
Devastating.
And there was a great moment in this match I want to put over when, because a big part of this match was Morishima and Shibata going at it, and they had some cool interactions. But Morishima and Shibata were fighting, and then Ibushi was trying to like kick Morishima, and he hit at him a couple times, but Morishima completely ignored his kicks and his strikes to continue fighting with Shibata. One of the best moments in Big Mouth Aloud history, in my opinion.
Definitely, and this also had me thinking, back in the day, Noah was still running strong. Those guys really had some name value. And Morishima's sad story with him, he had to retire last year. The official reason being that he had diabetes, I think?
Diabetes.
Diabetes. And, some say he isn't all thrilled with the stuff going on in Noah, but that's just some rumors, so let's go with the official story.
And it's another guy on these shows. It seems like half of this Big Mouth Loud people who appear on these shows all retired young.
Yeah.
You know, something. And we had Yoshikawa, too, on the undercard.
Yes.
Who was a favorite of mine at Battle Arts. He also retired very young.
Most of the Battle Arts guys didn't really make it anywhere or retired after Battle Arts.
And it's funny, because Sawa could have been, he had, options, but he said he wanted to retire, because he only wanted to be a battle arts in wrestling. And he does stuff with, a zest now.
Oh.
The amateur, MMA thing in Japan,
right.
ZSP. But yeah, so I don't know what it was about battle arts, but yeah, some of these guys just retired, and they had so much upside and so much potential, but never taken it. I'm looking at this card right now. We saw Kikutaro make his Big Mouth Loud debut on this show. And Sanshiro Takagi as well. What was Big Mouth Loud doing at this point?
Yeah, like, to that point, they had the main event for this show, which should have been Marufuji and Morishima against Shibata and Ibushi. Instead, it was Minoru Suzuki and Yoshiaki Fujiwara going against Katsunari Murakami and the great Yuta. Yutaka Yoshi with a horrible face paint.
Why?
I have no clue.
I said, we count on you for these answers, Striga.
What am I supposed to say? This is just...
There are no explanations.
Complete madness.
It was madness with attitude.
Yeah. Dude, sometime around that, when did he leave? Let me quickly look that up. I think the guy running this promotion and booking was also Fumihiko Uwai. Of course, at this point, Akira Maeda and Masakatsu Funaki had already left the promotion. And that happened after the final show. Why left after Big Mouth Loud Illusion 7, so after the final show happened. The promotion had big financial problems at that point, and it was just a struggle for them to be kept alive. It's always difficult for a promotion like this only running once, like every few months, you know. In 2006, they ran a show once a month, and it's difficult to run a complete promotion with one show a month. It's
especially when that show's in Korakuen Hall.
Yeah,
they had a lot of backing. Look at all these names they brought in. You know, you could tell that the wallet was running thin.
Right, the wallet was running thin, and that basically led to the final show's Big Mouth Loud Illusion 6. The big name value guys started slowly disappearing, and they brought in the Voodoo Murders.
My god.
Shuji Kondo, Taru, and Brother Yashi had a match against Nanabu Hara, Katsunari Murakami, and Katsumi Usuda.
The waste of three awesome guys.
Yes. This ended in a DQ because the Voodoo Murders brought in a chair and attacked referee Kyoi Wada with a chair. At first, Wada totally didn't sell it.
I wouldn't have either.
But then he was hit with a chair again and went down. This led to Shibata coming out and starting a feud with the Voodoo Murders, which led later to Shibata versus Taru at the next show.
It led to the death of the promotion.
Yes, basically. We had a nice little 7-minute match between Nakajima and Munenori Sawa that's only available on Nico Nico. I think I retweeted that last week. And of course, we had another loss for the big ace of the promotion, Katsuyori Shibata. He went down against Kensuke Sasaki.
Like I said, Shibata is Kai in this promotion. that's what I know. That's why I think that's maybe why I liked him so much. He reminded me of Kai in his book. Ishikawa teamed with Instant Inoue of all people versus the Mad Dogs. Again, not getting a win. I was starting to get a headache when I saw that. Every time I would see the Mad Dogs versus Ichikawa and someone, it made my day a little worse. And I watched these all at the same day, like within a span of 2 days. So,
dude,
it was a bad day.
That
a very bad.
This was one of the matches I was talking about earlier, because this was
more chaos.
Just chaos, and chaos became normal in Big Mouth Loud, and chaos became less attractive as the promotion became less attractive and didn't really produce the top guys, as they didn't protect the top guys very much.
Oh, not at all. To be fair, I will say, what else can you do with the Mad Dogs other than this?
Yeah, they can't have a total match. No.
That would be horrible.
Nothing much, no.
Yeah. So maybe we should not bring in the bad dogs. That would have been my suggestion if I was, you know, in the Big Mouth Loud creative meeting.
Two legendary guys from the then New Japan undercard, and I think very loyal to Uwai, so that's the way things are going in Japan, you know?
Tatsutoshi Goto and Michiyoshi Ohara. Right. But I didn't like them. That's all I can say about this.
This then led to the final show of Big Mouth Loud.
Some big names.
Some big names came. Minoru Suzuki was in there all the time. Yoshihiro Takayama had his debut at this show. But also, a match I think you wanted to get into was Ikuto Idaka and Minoru Fujita going against Katsumi Usuda and Manabu Hara.
Yes, I was so impressed. This was really where it stood out, that Hara, to me, looked really great. His interactions with Hidaka were awesome. I thought Fujita was up and down, as he was, but I actually was a huge fan of their team, like Fujita and Hidaka. Fujita on his own really doesn't do much for many people, but me included, but for some reason, he and Hidaka just had like this shoot best friends type of vibe to him. And I really enjoyed them here. Yusuda looked really good, but really liked Hidaka and Hara here. And I thought it built really well, too, because they started with some mat work between all four guys, and it grew to a big finishing stretch.
Yes.
But the finish kind of got a little weird, where Fujita hit the Sasuke segue, and I wish he would have got the pin there, but instead he went for his boneyard, which is kind of like a reverse bow and arrow type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look that good. I wish you just got the tip.
You know, out of those four people, Minoru Fujita looked really out of place in this match.
Just looking at him, like,
look,
his pants that he has. But like I said, you know, he's not that great, but with Hidaka, I think they have a strange chemistry together. Like, it's almost like Hidaka's, like, taking pity on this loser, pretty much, and kind of, you know, bringing him up with him, I thought. They had some matches with, like, Marufuji and Kenta, too, around this time.
Right, they
and
do.
And Diplom as well.
They totally have this weird chemistry, and right now, the two are the reigning NWA... Are they still the 0-1 tag team champions? No, they are not. Or are they? I'm not sure. But they are definitely...
Hayato.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But that...
Way better than Fujita.
But he's definitely the Michinoku Pro Tohoku tag team champion with Minoru Fujita, as well as the UWA World Tag Team Champion. So
yeah, you're totally right on that.
Those two are still teaming in 2016. Still best
friends. Like I said, it seems to me like they're like real life best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I appreciate that chemistry together. But I really like Hidaka way more than Fujita, though. Hidaka's good.
Talking about chemistry, Katsuyori Shibata and Tahu.
No chemistry.
No chemistry whatsoever. Just a strange brawl. Tahu never did anything for me, never was a great wrestler. Shibata really. He couldn't win here.
Yeah, it, just watching this, when I put this on, I considered skipping over it. But for the people, I watched this match. And it starts off with this awful, grungy theme music playing. It wasn't like the traditional, like, honorable, you know, theme or whatever they had. It was just this terrible music. The Voodoo Murders come out. Taru, Shuji Kondo, and Yashi. They come out and they attack. Who was this they attacked? Was it the ring announcer or?
I believe so. No, they Uwai who they attacked.
But so it was Uwai. So why they attack him, they pour water on him and crap. Taro looks horrible. speaking of he makes Fujita look like a superstar, like in terms of ring attire. And Taro's strikes were awful in this match. And my favorite part of this is Shibata actually still tried really hard when he got his brief. Taro dominated this match. That's another problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shibata, but when he got on offense, he did good. But my favorite part of this match was the turn towards the finish. Yashi, so incompetent, He can't even hit a chair shot on the outside, right? The easiest spot in wrestling. He totally misses on the chair shot for Shibata. Shibata has to stop. It looks goofy. They all run in. It's terrible.
It's
but
a,
at least...
It's a DQ. And then I think Uwai got into the ring. He then became the special referee for the match. Shibata beat Taro, and Shibata and Uwai are celebrating.
This was so... What a stupid-ass angle this was.
This was total American pro wrestling angle.
All wrong. And just so dumb. Like, so Shibata turns the tables after the match. He cleans house. Kondo looked like he was having a lot of fun with this goofball crap. The one actual competent worker of Voodoo Murders. And so anyway, Shibata cleans house on all three. He hits a PK on Taro. And Uwai comes in with this fake three count, and they celebrate like it accomplished something. Yeah. What? Why would you care about the pinfall after the match? You know,
that's like Taka and Taichi when they do their three count deal during the match.
That's true, but at least that's for comedic purposes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shibata acted like this was a big accomplishment. He was all pumped up and high-fiving Uwai and everything. They were hugging. It just looks so stupid. Like, if you're going to beat the crap out of three guys, that's kind of, you know, at least I can understand where that's going. So, to get the pinfall is just dumb.
Yeah. So let's get to the final Big Mouth Loud match ever.
The curtain closes, and what a match.
The curtain closes when Minoru Suzuki and Yoshihiro Takayama took on Katsunori Murakami and a mystery partner.
This was Blue Justice. I think this is who this was.
Captain Blue Justice? So,
yeah.
battle without honor or humanity, place.
Who could it be? Who could it be?
Out comes a guy wearing a blue mask, posing like Yuji Nagata does.
Yeah, wearing all his same type with sponsorship.
Gets to the ring.
With the salute.
Still Takayama and Suzuki still look like they don't know. Then the ring announcer announces him as Yuji Nagata. And you can see Minoru best. Suzuki and Takayama. Oh.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
What was the purpose of him wearing a mask in the first place?
I was so baffled by this, because I don't remember this. I've seen a lot of 2006 New Japan. I don't remember this being like a long-term gimmick for Nagata. Maybe I've forgotten it. Maybe this was on some shows I've never seen before, but this was completely confusing. But it was funny. I was amused by this more than that Taro match.
Yeah. Still, the match was alright. Nothing special.
There were some fun comedy spots, too. Yeah. Like, Murakami like lined up for this match.
Yeah, didn't Suzuki choke out Murakami?
Yeah,
with the Saka Otoshi into the sleeper hold, and that was it.
Yeah, Murakami really like he was presented as like a babyface here, which is different for him. He's always like a wild man. Like you said,
totally doesn't suit him.
No. And they had a spot here where, like, Nagata was playing tug-of-war with Murakami against Takayama and Suzuki. They had some great double teams, too. Like, they stood on Murakami, and this was basically just Murakami getting destroyed. Most of this match, it felt like, or getting embarrassed, because Takayama put his foot on Murakami and then lightly pinned him after the ref wouldn't count. I thought that was funny. There were some fun spots here, but not a great match that you would think of. Nagata was still a great worker here, too. And Suzuki was still very strong. This was after Takayama's stroke that he had.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, a couple of years prior. But their team, when they were in their prime, Suzuki and Takayama, was an amazing team. And Nagata and Murakami had a great history, too. They had one of my like all-time hidden gym matches for the IWGP title, Nagata and Murakami in 2002. I believe that's a New Japan World, so check that out because it is a great match. Murakami rocks in that match, trust me.
Yeah.
But that's how it ended.
Yeah, that's basically how it ended.
Star losing is how this company ended.
Yeah, this was the final show, August 20, 2006. On the same day, Katsuyori Shibata announced that he was leaving Big Mouth Loud.
Riding with on the wall.
Yeah, on September 13, the promotion founder, Fumihiko Uwai, left the promotion. some guys tried to rebuild it. Katsumi Usuda, Manabuhara, and I think Murakami too. They tried to start a second wave of Big Mouth Loud, but that never really got going. So in the end, they had a lot of debt. The promotion was in financial problems, and it was kind of usurped by First On Stage back then by President Yoshiyuki Nakamura. The First On Stage, of course, the company behind Zero One. Yeah. And it became part of the Global Pro Wrestling Alliance. Do you remember that? Yeah. The Global Pro Wrestling Alliance was founded also in 2006, 10 years ago. Was supposed to be a umbrella promotion kind of
sort. Kind of like NWA.
Yeah. Was supposed to be the Japanese NWA. Noah was part of it, Zero One, Pro Wrestling El Dorado. Oh, we need to do a show on Pro Wrestling El Dorado. Oh, I still have some of the shows. I can get that to you.
Nice. I can't wait to see some of the Ishimori.
Yeah. DDT, Big Mouth Loud was in, Kayentai Dojo, IWA, Kensuke Office, and some individuals were in that. Ring of Honor, World League Wrestling, the Austrian promotion, EWA, and Steve Corino's World One promotion. Was supposed to be some kind of an NWA, and it never led anywhere. They had three shows. Two of them was the Differ Cup, which is a legendary mixed promotional tournament. 2007, but that was basically it. Murakami, he went on to still represent Big Mouth Loud. Officially, Big Mouth Loud was closed in 2010. July 5, 2010 was the official dissolution of Big Mouth Loud, but they didn't have any shows. But Murakami still represented Big Mouth Loud. And if you remember, 2010, Pro Wrestling Noah, March 26, 2010, Mohamed Yone and Takeshi Rikkyo defended the GHC Tag Team title against Katsumi Usuda and then Big Murakami.
Big Murakami.
Dude, prior to that, Murakami and Usuda had a match with Yone and Rikkyo as well, few days earlier in Kurken Hall, which led to the fans vociferously booing the Big Mouth Loud team out of the building because they were just not cooperating.
It was 2010 were dark times for Noah. Disobey were the tag team champions then. You know, Murakami and Usuda, it's too bad. Usuda was still a great wrestler in 2010. But Murakami, like you said, he can be a bit of a hothead. You know, he can lose his composure pretty easily. And that was bad when that happened.
Yeah.
But they did not return after that.
No, that didn't work at all. Murakami went on to work for Kensuke Office. Went on for work for Style E. Style E and many, many smaller promotions. He's still around for Tokyo Gurentai, he was around for the Tenryu project, but he never went anywhere else really.
No. Maybe he should come back to New Japan, start the Makai Club again.
He would be my choice for Time Bomb because is a time bomb. He is a ticking bomb. He could explode any minute.
Exactly, but we would have things. We'd have lots to talk about if he came out.
Yeah, Big Mouth Loud. What's your final thoughts on this promotion?
It had a lot of great guys and wasted all of them. That's exactly my thoughts. So, no one became benefited, really, in terms of wrestlers. I don't think anyone really gained anything due to crazy booking. That made no sense. And I wish, I would love if like a new promotion started up with better leadership, better booking of all the guys that could have been something that was in Big Mouth Loud. I think you could have a pretty awesome promotion if you took those guys and booked them well. But I wish it had a lot of potential, and they totally dropped every ball you could, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think I can add much more, but to get to that ball analogy, they had the ball in their court, you know? They had guys.
I know. They had a great run.
They should have given Murakami and Shibata the ball and had them run with it. But there was some political issues that prevented that, and some other, you know, you mentioned that booking flaws that prevented that. So in the end, they never got going, and things went, as we said, downhill pretty fast. As it never felt that they had any idea where they were going, and that was
a big problem.
Yeah, that's just bad.
Yeah, like they dropped the ball. If they had stuck to one style in particular, they might have even had a better shot at it. But I just didn't think the booking was very good, and I thought they wasted a lot of guys.
Yes, they did. So, Big Mouth Loud split away from New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2005, closed down in 2006. Some of the guys, like we mentioned, Riki Shoshu and Takashi Uwano, they came back to New Japan, but it was great to go back and watch some of the stuff, and also watch some guys in their young stages, like Nakajima, like Ibushi, Morishima to Shibata, of course, Manabu Hara, Mono Norisawa. Great, great guys back then. There should have been so much more, as we mentioned, from Sawa and Manabu Hara.
Yep.
It's just sad to see where things went for those guys. A lot of talent was wasted, as you said.
They've always had a grassroots fan base, too. Like, ever since it's come down, it's kind of like, or maybe not grassroots, but like a cult-type fan
base. Yeah.
You know, there's always a few passionate fans in Big Mouth Loud that still hang around online, if you can find them. But, you know, like I said, I love their roster. I wish they would have done more.
Yeah, and of course this show wouldn't have been possible without Ozzy, the Michinoku Pro fan from Australia, who was on this show. Because Ozzy has the DVDs of those events, and he submitted them to YouTube. And so, if you search Big Mouth Loud, there is a channel. You can watch back all of the matches that we talked about, and a couple of more matches we didn't talk about. But Big Mouth Loud, certainly a promotion to watch if you want to go back and go back in time and see what pro wrestling in the mid 2000s in Japan was.
It was a wacky time.
It was a wacky time, certainly. Yeah. talking about wacky times, we transition to modern times again. New Japan Pro Wrestling ran their show Destruction in Tokyo on Saturday, the 17th, yesterday, as we are recording this on the Sunday, as you mentioned, drawing 2,803 fans to Ota Ward, which holds about 4,500 fans, which has to be considered a failed experiment to run a show with the junior heavyweight title in the main event of such a big show. Wackiness occurred as Bushi beat Kushida for the junior heavyweight strap in a totally chaotic match, and I feel like chaos is the main title of this show.
Yes, this was straight out of Big Mouth Loud's playbook.
Yeah,
and I will say this: this to me totally goes back to the Super J Cup, main evented by Kushida, a very disappointing crowd then. A very bad crowd then. Like, that was less than 50% filled. And this is another kind of thing. And this is what I kind of said. I don't know what you could do at this point, because they've tried to make Kushida look strong the best they can. I think that Super J Cup did damage to him.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
To be honest with
you. You know,
even though I think it did a lot of damage to him.
When the Super J Cup was finished, I said that it accomplished was that they cemented Kushida as the ace of Japanese junior wrestling. But as I was told by our friend and listener, Sbok underscore.
Yeah, Sbok.
He's a great guy. Shout out to him. He recently sent me some magazines from Japan.
Thank you, Sbok. Why didn't you send them to me too?
He actually sent you and me a note saying he's happy that some foreigners are talking about Japanese wrestling, and I need to say hello to you from him. He sent me a note in Japanese, and he translated it for me. And I have he sent me some great magazines, including a kind of a almanac of Japanese wrestling, going back to the Greco-Roman days, from the Inoki. From the Riki Dozan days to the Inoki Baba days, it also has some kind of an encyclopedia of moves and wrestlers in it, all in Japanese, and in a lineage of promotions, which is very interesting. You have to go to my Twitter, and I tweeted some pictures on Tuesday.
Oh yeah, definitely do that. I'm definitely going to do that. I will thank Sbok for one thing too. He did send me something just as good when he sent me a video of a great. An epic performance of Get Wild to Takao Mori and City Hunter's theme song. He appreciated my slight rendition of it last week. So thank you, Sbok, for that.
Yeah.
It was a great... He liked it! So I trust his opinion more than yours on Japanese music. So that's all I'm saying. I'm not throwing shade on anyone, but thank you, Sbok. I appreciate that support and the video. That was an awesome performance in the Tokyo Dome. TM Network, right there, baby.
Get Wild. Maybe back together very soon.
Yeah.
The thing is that apparently there is a backlash on Kushida. And you could visibly see and hear that the people were not behind Kushida in this match. Most people were very much behind Bushi. And Kushida does this fist. He throws this fist, which was a great visual, to be honest, when he punched the mist out of Bushi's mouth.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool.
But still, I think the move is called Masahiro Tanaka, and people booed after he punched Bushi in the face. And this is one of the big go-to moves that Kushida does in every match, and it's supposed to create a face pop for him. And it didn't.
It's funny because Sawa did that same style.
Yes,
too,
yes, we were talking about.
Yeah, he named it after a different Japanese picture, though. But like you said, Kushida to me, like I said, I just think that tournament, that Super J Cup, was so bad, and it left such a bad taste in everyone's mouth. And he was unwittingly as the winner. You'd think it would submit him as the ace, but I think that. It just made him look bad, like to be kind of the face of this terrible tournament that let everyone down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it sucks for him because he's done his best he can do. You know, he can't do more than he's done in the ring. I feel like, but like you said, the fans were not behind him. This was another wild, typical, you know, Ingobernables match. But Ingobernables are super over, and I think that may have had something to do with it as well, feuding him with Bushi. And to be honest with you, I haven't been in love with Bushi, just purely in-ring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. It's almost like... Well, I mean, I guess I do kind of know who it is. And they set up this thing with the Mystery Man, too, with Ingobernables. Previously, so that added even more intrigue to Ingobernables. So anyone feuding with them, I think, is going to take a hit right now with this Mystery Man, you know, playing a role. I thought the match didn't start out as well as I wanted, and the interference took away from the match, as always, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally took me out of the match.
Yeah. It just felt too flat I don't think this is the right time for the title change. Either, to be honest with you. I don't agree with the decision.
Comes to a weird time as we, a couple of months back, basically laid down the road for Kushida to lose the belt to Will Ospreay in the end in the Tokyo Dome. Yeah. But it's gonna be interesting to see how things go on and where they are going with this.
And there's been a lot of like, even before this, we saw the match before this with Fish stepping up to face Shibata.
Yeah, that was pretty obvious what this was leading to.
Yeah.
Quickly, my thoughts. Bushi, he comes off as a legitimate superstar when he comes out, you know? He looks so great. His wrestling is good. He doesn't really doesn't look like he has this idea of a certain style, you know?
Yeah.
I thought the finish was really weak when he just did the MX. Bushi, Kushida kicked out. Then Bushi went for the MX again. Kushida didn't kick out. Yeah. So that was it. Bushi, in my estimation, made him look a little bit weak because he didn't. It felt like he didn't have another move to go for, but the MX, which is a incredibly silly move, to be honest.
That's another issue right there. You know, I was actually always a big fan of his. Before this Ingo Bernables thing, even when he was in All Japan, I thought he had a lot of upside. He was like T28 in All Japan. And when he came in as Bushi, they never did anything with him, but I thought he always stood out in the six-man tags as one of the go-to guys. And he's got this push recently, but I totally agree with you that I think his entrance is big time, and the in-ring doesn't quite live up to that. But I do think the interference hurts. I don't think this... just like I say with Sonata and Evil, like, I don't think this character... I don't think he's honed in on it the way that he could in the ring, like Naito.
The character holds him back, certainly.
Yes.
I want to go back to quote, before we get to Shibata and Fish, to quote S-Bock once more. Oh no! It's actually one part is about Kushida and the other part is leading to Shibata and Fish. S-Bock says he doesn't like Kushida since he was on commentary for the G1 show in Machida this year, and he said he did disrespectful guest commentary at the G1 show, and he concluded that Kushida doesn't respect other wrestlers. So that might play into the kind of resentment that Japanese fans have towards Kushida right now.
I believe he has a podcast. Doesn't he, in Japanese? Kushida does?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, that's always translated on our friend Chris Charlton's Twitter. But, you know, so check him out and see, you know, maybe we should look into this, get some investigation going. Is Kushida a jerk?
You're right. Is Kushida a jerk? And then he says, it was this year's first day of the big of the Best of the Super Juniors, which Kyle won. I think he beat Kushida. Yep, he beat Kushida.
Yeah, Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah. Kyle O'Reilly beat Kushida, and S-Bock says his Japanese is simple but strong and sincere. So this makes Kyle O'Reilly really seems like he is really going for it right now. He seemed so confident when he came out against Juice Robinson, and him and Juice went on to have a very, very good match.
The Juice was loose.
Juice was loose. I really like Juice's lariat. He throws a great, great lariat, and also his not last ride powerbomb, but he does not a normal throwaway powerbomb, but he has a kind of a fallaway powerbomb. Kind of the stuff, you know.
I like his entrance attire. It's very like old school. It reminds me of like Dr. Death or something. Yeah. Like his jacket that he has.
Juice Robinson has really found his place in New Japan. And Kyle O'Reilly is on the verge of becoming a heavyweight. And
I was just about to say that he looks bigger.
Yes, he certainly is bigger. He is. Yeah. And great match with two guys getting over with the crowd, which isn't easy for two guys who are not Japanese, you know? And I like the finish, and I like the camera work on the finish as well, as they zoomed in to Juice Robinson's hands as he was holding on when Kyle O'Reilly was going for the cross arm breaker. And you could see his hands slowly slipping away and him having no choice but to tap out. Great finish to a very good match. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the combination from O'Reilly. Here.
Yeah, so this setup, Kyle O'Reilly coming out again with Bobby Fish, going against Katsuyori Shibata for the NEVER title. I don't know, did you see the match the two had in Ring of Honor? Shibata and Fish?
No, I try to avoid Ring of Honor.
Okay. So this was basically the same match. They had in Ring of Honor some different stuff, but mostly the same stuff. For example, the moment when Fish was kicking Shibata's chest. They also did that in Ring of Honor. Different was that, of course, now Shibata won in Ring of Honor. They went into a kind of a ground battle, and Shibata was going for a triangle in Ring of Honor, and Fish just rolled him up for the victory. Which, yeah, kind of a fluke.
Whose match did you like better on this show?
Kind of
Fish's or O'Reilly's?
I'd still say Fish's, because he had a great strong style match with Shibata, I thought.
I like this match too.
Nothing special, but a solid, good performance.
No? Yeah, I thought this was okay. Like I said, I thought it was good.
For Shibata standards, of course, this was okay.
Yeah, that's true. I said on the G1 show, I thought Shibata had a lot of chances to do better the last month. And his Ring of Honor matches haven't gotten rave reviews either.
The one match he had with Silas Young, he basically squashed Silas Young, and the other match with Fish, which was, as I said, basically the same match as this one, so also a good match.
Yeah, so. He's good. I don't think he's, like I said, it's hard to put my finger on it, because I don't really have I like Shibata a lot, but going into the G1, I thought he was him and Nagata were by far the MVPs of New Japan, of the year. And now, like, I've seen him wrestle all these times these last 2 months, and I feel like whatever he had against Nagata isn't there, against Fish and these guys, and it really anyone in G1, I thought. I don't know what it is. That's just my feeling on Shibata right now. There's nothing I can point my finger to, but I didn't think this was a great match with Fish. I thought it was about as good as that O'Reilly match, to be honest with you.
My impression is that Shibata, unlike a couple of months ago, he's taking being the NEVER champion more seriously right now, coming out with a belt.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah,
I appreciate tough. I'm just saying, in the ring, like, you know, he seems like, I thought he had more against Nagata. That, like, remember his match against at Dominion against Nagata?
Yes,
and that was an incredible moment. But not just the moment, but the match before it was great. And I don't see that in this Fish match or in this. You know, I don't see the same Shibata as we see in that match against here. And I don't know what it is. I think maybe it could be that, you know, he's holding off. Maybe he sees a push coming, you know, or something like that. He's been tipped off to something like that. I don't know. But that wouldn't make much sense considering Shibata's history in New Japan. But I feel like I want to see more from Shibata, just because right now he's very good, but I don't think he's much better than O'Reilly, you know, significantly better on this show. Just purely in the ring.
Yeah. Totally agree. But those two are going to mix it up. I believe this is going to be...
And he'll have another chance. This should be a great match.
Yes. I believe this is going to happen at King of Pro Wrestling in October, which certainly makes sense. Another big match for that show, besides already announced Katsushika Okada and Naomi Chimaru Fuji for the Heavyweight Championship, for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. This show, there is nothing much else to talk about, I believe.
It wasn't that great.
It was a show. I like the Los Ingobernables match again. They always deliver. The undercard was solid, but nothing outstanding, I'd say. Outstanding was, of course, Yujiro Takahashi. We just talked about it on my German podcast with my man Flosh. And Flosh said, now Yujiro isn't a wrestler and a part-time pimp, but now he is a pimp who is a part-time wrestler.
He's found his calling.
Yeah. He brought four girls to the ring, one of which Kenny Omega took away later on, which was kind of funny. But that was a show.
I like that tag match too. Yeah. But you and Omega's match. No surprise who put in the most effort.
Yeah, of course. Who is now the golden boy of chaos?
Yes, he's the man. Osprey did his thing.
Yes.
You know, Fale, he was in and around. What do you think of this build-up with Fale and Okada having a non-title match to presumably set up a title match at the famed New Zealand show that's coming up?
Yeah, you know, MSL and Sullivan always talk about this on their show. When you beat the champion, why don't you become the champion?
I totally agree with that.
When you beat the champion and you don't get a title shot, that even makes less sense. And in this case, Fale beat Okada in the G1, and he has to beat him again in a singles match to receive a title shot?
Yeah, that didn't really make any sense either.
Dude.
They're screwing Fale.
Yeah! Obvious who is the babyface in this.
Yes.
Man.
Okada did show some great heel. He started to show some more heel tendencies against Mara Fuji, though. So
yes.
What we're going to see here. But the problem is, like, Fale's title match, they've already announced Okada and Mara Fuji.
Yeah. They did.
Yeah. But I hope Fale has a good match in his home country when they do eventually have that title match. Or maybe just Okada just beats Fale.
maybe he just beats him. I don't know.
That is the feud.
Yeah.
Okada is going to be straight man.
Well, yeah. certainly a weird New Japan show. Not the best show they did. But as I said, they are experimenting with different guys headlining their shows, and you got to give them credit and the benefit of the doubt for doing so.
It's hard to have great top to bottom shows when you're split three ways.
Yeah. And I don't think they will do this again with the split three shows for Destruction, because you can see that people aren't really excited for these shows, as Ota didn't sell out.
Yeah,
Hiroshima will probably sell out because the building isn't that big and they have two big singles matches with Okada and Fale and Yoshihashi versus Kenny Omega. I think the place holds about 2,500 people. They should really sell that out. And then they have Kobe World with Naito and Michael Elgin, right? Should do well, but I don't think they are selling out Kobe World, to be honest.
Ooh, I said, you know, and about that Omega Yoshihashi match, I just want to throw out my theory real quick on how Yoshihashi can win this match. I'm willing it. I hope I can will it through this match, because I love Yoshihashi, as we know. Tacos rocks. But my idea for this is, and why I don't think this is that crazy, I think it's actually like there's a 5% chance or 10% chance this could happen. If Yoshihashi wins, he could then defend the briefcase against Naito, and that would be his way to get into the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. If they decide that Naito is our most over guy, and we want him in the main event, and we want him with the world title, and we don't want to do anything with this fan vote deal, if they decide, hey, we just want a straight main event with Naito, that is the way to get to it, because Omega cannot defend against Naito because he beat Naito already. So I think there's a slight, very slight, I think Omega will win pretty clearly. But I think there is a chance to look out for that. That's possible. That's just my theory.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think that's a nice...
If they wanted to get Naito to get in the Wrestle Kingdom, it's not about Yoshihashi, it's about Naito.
Yeah, that's a nice way to leave our listeners thinking about that theory of yours, because we are all out of time right now. This was a special episode, as we just wanted to talk about Big Mouth Loud, and I think you could hear that we had some fun doing that. And it wasn't all bad, but it just was a funny, fun time going back in time.
I enjoyed going back.
Yeah, we will probably be back next weekend. Can't say right now when exactly that's going to happen, but we are certainly going to talk about the Michinoku Pro Fukumen League that's going on right now, and we're trying to get in some other stuff from some other promotions. We still have to talk about Hikaru Sato. And we have to talk about...
The war goes on.
Yeah, we have to talk about 0-1 and Akebono starting a business relationship. But that's going to be in the next episode. For now, this has been it. I am your host, Striga. You can find me at Twitter, STRIGGA. You can find me at Purolove.com. You can find me at CageMatch.net. And my co-host Dylan can be found at the following places.
Check out one of the top ProRes resources on the web, ProResSpirit.net. You can check me out on Twitter at Dylan0PS. Like Esbach, our friend, and also our other friend, Syed, alerted us that he listened to us 3 times in the last week.
Wasn't it 5 times?
5 times? I thought it was 3 times in 5 days.
Maybe. That's still
it was five times.
Well, even it was five. 3 or 5 times, it's still great that somebody has the passion to listen to us more than once.
One time.
And, yeah. One time is enough, right? Usually.
But hope everything's going good in Kashmir for you, brother. You know, shout out to Esbach for rightfully defending Hikaru Sato, as you mentioned on Twitter as well. There's lots of backlash. I put this up on Twitter. We've got different answers for everyone. Either the work bothers you, or his look bothers you, or neither bothers you, or both bothers you. I've got answers for all across the spectrum, so please alert me to your thoughts on Sato's look, his hairstyle, and his lack of shoes. because I love Hikaru Sato, and his hair is perfectly fine by me. With that, also check out my new show on MLW Radio.
Yeah!
I have a show dedicated, much like you do, in German. I will be doing a show
in Spanish.
Not really. Only a little bit. I dropped to Spanish. I must have surprised many people when I actually got things right in Spanish.
Oh!
On that show, yes. It was all a gimmick, people. check out Lucha Talk. It should be available by the time this show drops. If not, it'll be right around the corner. Me and my man Fredo Esparza from LuchaWorld.com and Liger Fever, the top Spanish translator on the
Shout world. Out to those two guys. Great followers on Twitter.
Yeah, real cool guy. If you follow Lucha Libre, you gotta follow them on Twitter, even more than me. but like I said, you know, check them out because they do some awesome stuff. And the show's good. We talk about Triple Mania, CML Aniversario, and the match of the year anywhere in the world. To me, the match of the year. I announced my vote for it, and so check that out.
I am still going to watch that match. I know what match you're talking about. You put that up on your Twitter. I'm going to watch that within the next few days.
You can't see it anywhere in any other style. It's completely different to nearly every match in Japan.
Yeah. So, one quick mention I want to make. This Thursday, besides the New Japan Destruction Show in Hiroshima, there is also the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix Finals in Korakuen Hall with some cool matches. Tony Storm defending the SWA World title against Blue Nikita.
That should be really good.
Io Shirai defending the World of Stardom title against Kaylee Ray. I saw that match when I was in England. And, of course, the finals of the 5-Star Grand Prix, Tessa Blanchard against Yoko Bito.
Man, those title matches look great. I love Bito. Bito is great coming back after 4 years. Away from the ring, she's done a great job, and I can't wait to look. I will, in all seriousness, I will give Tessa a chance. Despite my better judgment, I want to watch everyone in the 5-Star Grand Prix, and hopefully we can talk about that a little at some point.
Still so much to catch up on. I don't know when.
Maybe we'll just talk about the final.
Yeah. Should be cool.
But it should be really cool stuff. So check that out, guys.
Right. Okay. This has been the Eastern Lariat, the special episode on Big Mouth Loud, New Japan, and some other stuff in the end. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a review, leave us a 5-star rating if you really mean it. And I hope, hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
MLWRadio.com network.